About 2 weeks ago, Adele came out with that video. How many of you have seen that or heard that song before this moment? Okay, then you're one of the over 371 million people who in the last 2 weeks have watched that video. And maybe some of you account for like 10 or 15 of those at a time. It's funny, when she came out with this video and the song, it was like the internet broke for a little bit and everyone was freaking out about it. And I listened to it and I thought, wow, this is good. And then when the video came out, I went to watch it thinking, I have no idea what to expect. But 371 million people have been drawn to this. Why? There's no pyrotechnics. There's no things that are like flashy about it. There's no scantily clad women. There's no dancing. There's nothing. So what are people connecting with? Why do so many people go back to the song? She's ministering to people and connecting to people through pain. Through pain. And in this song, you know, it's a song about, you know, and some people love this song and hate this song. I get that. But she's reaching out to her ex in this song because things did not go quite the way as they planned. And, you know, it's so true that we can plan all we want, but things do not go the way that we expect, do they? Even this morning for this whole service, it was planned a week ago. We're ready to run. Messages have been ready for, goodness, weeks. We've been working through stuff. And guess what? Plans change. And so this morning, I'm telling you, plans have changed again. And I sat there this morning trying to pray, God, how do I communicate all that's in here? I have plans. I have expectations about the way things are supposed to be. And his great message to me was, well, cut out half of it. That's cool. So our kind of promo stuff, we said we're talking about fighting and we're talking about divorce and fair. So we're going to take some time next week. And I want to make sure the stuff that goes when things don't go like we planned. When we think we're going to get married, it says, hello, it's me. I was wondering after all these years, if you'd like to, but I ain't done much healing. I'm trying not to sing it. about who we used to be. When we were younger and free, I've forgotten how it felt before the world fell at our feet. There's such a difference. We can tell she hasn't fully healed from these issues, even after time. Free, but something changed. Now, if you have ever been in a relationship with someone, maybe you're not writing songs about them. You could make millions, but it takes discipline. And this morning, as we continue in our fighting, and issues in our marriage. Your relationship with God is far more important than your relationship with your spouse or your significant other. You have a time to establish that as your foundation. And for those of us who are married, then last week we kind of tackled we tackled physical intimacy, even socially, being intimate with one another is very, very important. Is not God's ideal for our life. He wants the best, and anything outside. Parent here this morning. Which is a huge value here at Crossbridge. In fact, it's a lot of work if your marriage is anything like mine. Discussions and maybe an argument or two. Yeah, if you're like, no, that's probably not good. Off on stuff. Because two people with two different opinions coming together should disagree on that. That's a whole different issue that you're going to have to figure out because you're so enmeshed you don't have an opinion anymore. Not you to be like, oh, yay, okay. We could talk about that some other. Issues in our marriage, these disagreements that we have, how do we handle them? Because I don't think that that's true. I don't think we all fight. I believe that disagreements that become about us turn into fights that destroy if it's not remedied. So then how do we disagree? Give you some real practical tools, right? But I think there's something else that's far more important. And then Philippians chapter 2. Philippians is going to be about 3/4 away on the right hand. Paul wrote it. There'll be a Galatians, Ephesians. Then you'll find Philippians, and Colossians is right after that. So if you see those books there, just walk back and take it. It's yours. Keep it. We want you to have that. In Philippians chapter 2 with these two verses. Therefore, if you have any encouragement from Christ, if any comfort from his love, if any common sharing in the Spirit, if any tenderness, passion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having this. As we get a a start here. Paul wants to see us united, right? He doesn't want to see people separate. He has a oneness with people. Real agreement, not fake agreement. When we're agreeing and we're loving each other and there's a oneness in spirit and in mind, you united well. Now this would be awesome, right? How do you get there? That's the question. Let's continue. Verse 3. Rather in humility, value others above yourself. In your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Jesus. Check that out. Being in very nature God, did not consider rather he made himself nothing by taking on the very nature of a servant. Master techniques to argue well that will help us to disagree better. The disagreement. Paul clearly states that in order to find unity, oneness, we need to do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Let's be honest. Part of our issue when we go into conflict is the fact we think we're right about. I know that I feel this way. And if I'm going to usually approaching it from the standpoint that I am right and she is wrong. My wife will tell you that's not true. But the reality is, I don't like it. And when I argue, I want to win. I'm not going in with this Philippians 2 attitude of consider others everything for selfishness. I want to win. He takes on here of selflessness has nothing to do with selfishness. You know, too often our arguments are concerned around what I want, not around what's best for you or best for us. It's almost always about the I, isn't it, when we argue? We argue selfishly. We argue for ourselves. And the illustration that Paul gives is Jesus, who being 100% God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. And you know, there's a tough theological process and kind of concept where Jesus is 100% God, but he's also 100% human. And you're like, how can you be two 100%? You see, Christ was sinless. And because he was sinless, he's 100% God. You and I are never born. We're not even born sinless. We're born sinful creatures. But Christ was not. Christ was not. And so he still, in very nature, is God. But he did not consider anything about himself something to be used to his own advantage. He didn't argue in a way that just kind of could change people's hearts who disagree with him. He didn't snap his fingers and make conflict just disappear. And he's like, oh, good, now you agree. Jesus, his life was filled with conflict and disagreements. It was filled with it. But it doesn't mean he didn't have a backbone, because I don't want anyone to think that by taking on, you know, the attitude of Jesus and a servanthood attitude, it means you just need to roll over and let someone who's arguing with you win all the time. That's not what this is, because Jesus didn't do that, and he's our ultimate example. Instead, he did nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility, he just considered. He approached the person and the argument, specifically the person, as though they were better than himself. I wonder how differently conflict would look in our lives and in our marriages if both people came from a place of humility rather than a place of pride. How different would our disagreements be if we took on the humility of Jesus and started from that position? What if it wasn't about winning? And I know that's so difficult for some to hear. It's hard for me to say. You know, I love what Francis Chan says in his book. It's called You and Me Forever. He says this: if two people make it their goal to imitate the humility of Christ, everything else will take care of itself. It really is that simple. Arguments escalate when we want to be right more than we want to be Christ. It's easy to get blinded in the heat of disagreements. Soon, all we want is to win, even if victory requires sin. I do that. The one who wins the argument is usually the one who acts less like Christ. This morning, I confess to you that sometimes in my marriage, in my parenting, and in relationships, I am more concerned with winning than I am looking like Jesus. I hate losing, but it makes me wonder, What if my arguments weren't about I lose, but more about I look more like Jesus now? I even wonder how many arguments would cease to exist if we just took on the attitude of Christ all the time. My first challenge is simply that. Think about how you go into your arguments. Are you more concerned with winning than looking like Jesus? Are you more concerned with winning than looking like Jesus? But we will have conflict. So what do we do? I want to look through some very quick verses with you. And if you have your program, you can write down some of these verses. And I'd highly encourage you to, if you could, memorize them, as they will benefit you greatly in your marriage. Same with the Philippians 2 passage. There's a lot of times I approach arguments with Eileen, and I'm thinking, attitude of Christ, because I want to win. And it doesn't always work. But do nothing out of selfish ambition does help to have that on the brain. So, you know, it's in Proverbs 18:13. There's a great verse here. To answer before listening, that is folly and shame. When you are about to argue, let's just start off all arguments by shutting our mouths. How great would that be? We go into arguments and we are at like full tilt, ready to go. Does anybody else ever plan your argument before you get into it besides me? Like, I know the points that I've got ready that I'm like, oh, I'm gonna get you with these. And I have all that stuff ready. And there's times even this week with conflict in Eileen and I's life that we've had where I've said, oh, if you've got this conflict, you should plan it out this way. Like, oh my gosh, I'm planning how to be on the offensive, and it's folly to answer before listening. We're planning arguments for issues we don't even know exist. And a lot of times if we're planning arguments, they're not the issue at hand. They're the issue for us, but probably not the person we're in conflict with. It is folly and shame to speak before listening. James speaks greatly to this, you know, be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry. We need to really pay attention to those things and listen well. Ephesians 4, 25 to 27 says, therefore, each of you must put off falsehood and speak truthfully to your neighbor, for we are all members of one body. In your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you are still angry, and do not give the devil a foothold. Please, in your marriages, in your relationships, put off falsehood, speak truthfully, tell the truth. When you argue, don't lie. When someone approaches you about something you are ashamed of, the moment you lie about it is the moment you lose trust in that relationship. Tell the truth. You will do stupid things. I say that from lots of experience. And you will get caught. Tell the truth, tell the truth, tell the truth, tell the truth, tell the truth. And then when that issue rolls over, when you're angry and you're trying to figure it out quickly. Do not go to bed angry. You will rest horribly. You'll wake up ticked off and you're ready to fight again. As much as you can, release all of this stuff. Sometimes that doesn't mean, you know, resolve it till 2 a.m. because 2 a.m. fights are never good fights. You know, super tired fights aren't good. But there are times you can look at someone and say, we're tabling this for right now. We're going to get back to this, but I just need like 10 minutes to breathe because I'm heated right now. Stop and step away. You know, I've learned this because Eileen and I, we argue differently. We argue with each other differently. I argue very logically and she argues very generally. She uses phrases like, well, everyone thinks. And no one would understand. I don't understand those phrases. And over the last couple of years, I've had to start to try to learn to listen for what she is saying. Because my logical brain tells me that everyone doesn't think whatever. And that no one isn't really like nobody. There's always someone. You know, there are times I have to kind of slow her down and ask for more details. And this isn't because I want to frustrate her, but it's because I want to understand what's the true feeling behind what she's going through. And that's not to say she's not telling the truth, because usually her feelings are spot on. But how they're communicated is different than how I naturally understand. And she's also had to learn to be very patient with me, learning that I ask questions a lot, and I'm not trying to be a jerk to her. That's what she thought to begin with, but I'm not. I just need to figure out what's really going on, because I don't understand. It's not that I'm not listening. I am. I just don't process that way. Learning this about each other has helped us to avoid anger and to resolve conflict so much faster. I can't remember a night we've gone to bed angry at each other in a long time. Going to bed at peace is much better than going to bed furious at each other. Remember, it's more about looking like Jesus than fighting like hell. And I'll close this out with Ephesians 4:32, where it says, "Be kind and compassionate to one another, just as Christ God forgave you." When someone makes a mistake, please show the same forgiveness that you've received from Jesus. And maybe you're here this morning and you've never received that forgiveness from Jesus. If you have not, you will never be able to forgive someone else. It's not in your nature or mine. We absolutely have to have Christ inside us who forgave us. And when we know how much we've been forgiven of, we become much more compassionate towards the one that we are with. And so this morning, because Christ God has forgave us, we can celebrate that. And to close out our service this morning, you know, we did a lot of the other stuff up front. We're going to celebrate communion together. And I never want to make the assumption that there's no issues here, that every marriage is perfect. If I did that, that'd be horrible. So I know that there's issues. I know that there's conflict. I understand, because I have these conversations with you and I have them with my friends about my own marriage. I get that it's hard. But I also understand that Jesus Christ came to bring oneness, to bring unity, to restore relationships. First, to restore our relationship with God. Then, to restore our relationships with each other, because they're broken. And so this morning, when we celebrate communion, instead of us passing out communion to you, we're going to switch things up. It just fits with the whole service so far. Why not? And as we switch it up, what we're going to be doing is asking is, would you come and take communion? If you're married and you feel like you've got issues in your marriage right now that you need to work through, and there's some conflict that's unresolved, take communion together, understanding that Jesus has brought oneness. And if he can forgive you, you can look in the eyes of your spouse and genuinely say, "I forgive you." Don't hold it over their head tomorrow or a week later. That's not fair. Jesus doesn't do that to you and to me. Don't do it to them. But on the other side, there may be people in here who you've gone through the pain and the sting of divorce. And I am sorry that you have had to experience that. You've experienced a severing, and there's a whole lot of stuff that goes into that. Next week, I want to give it special time to talk about that. But you need to know this. Christ's heart breaks with yours through that situation. He does not look at you and where you sit right now, shaming you. He's not frustrated at you. I believe this morning he's calling you back to himself, saying, "Please, let me back in. I love you. We'll make this right. We'll bring oneness." And so if you're there, you can come take communion, and as you break your bread, think about Christ and his relationship with you. And as the worship team comes up, they're going to play behind us for a little bit. And, you know, if you need prayer, and there may be someone else in here, you're like, "I'm not even married. I'm not divorced. I'm pretty good, right?" No, you probably got issues with somebody else. And if that someone else is here, go ahead and take communion with them too. You can go restore that relationship, and you're like, "That'd be weird." We're going to take it as many times as you need it with whomever you've got issues, because it's Christ that brings us together and gives us forgiveness. If you're here and God's working on your heart and you feel like, "I need to be prayed over," there will be some people up at the tables who'd be willing to pray for you. And, you know, just let us know what we could pray for. And then, so when we're done taking communion, we'll close out in prayer, and then we'll be dismissed together. So let me pray for us as we take communion together. God, I thank you that because of Jesus, we can be in relationship again with you. Thank you that you've not forgotten us, that even when we run away, and I confess that I feel like I'm in constant conflict with you because I'm selfish, and I even approach my relationship with you from a point of selfishness and vain conceit, thinking I truly know better. But I am so thankful that you, God, know better, that you know that for my marriage, that you know that for my parenting, that you know that for every friendship I have. So God, this morning as we celebrate communion, we do so understanding that you're our God, that we are loved by you, and that you desire a wholeness for us, for our marriages, and for generations to come that we model that to. Will you be with us as we celebrate the blood and the cup of redemption and your body broken for us? It's in your name we pray. Amen.